The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Spencer Hager and Cameron Utley. And today's topic comes at a great time of the year when the behavioral aspect of finances kick in. This is a hard one for me. I'm just going to admit at my age, even now, this time of year is rough for me. And the marketing is real, right? So holiday season, you know, extensive spending, not so much focus on saving, ignoring the gut.
Tis the season.
Yeah, right. Ignoring the gut that says, maybe you shouldn't buy that right now for, you know, for a few days or a few months or ever. Big purchases, that kind of thing. Lots of sales going on around us for everything from shoes to appliances to cars. You know, maybe even looking at buying a house, large purchases, even big spending like big boats and vacation homes. So I want to talk about the financial naughty or nice list, wins and lessons to start the new year. Got a laundry list of things. You know, I kind of want to get into sort of some, maybe share some relatable stories about people who maybe for the first one, splurging on luxury items, you know, but not necessarily focusing on the goals and how that can have a ripple effect on your finances. Because let's face it, there's something in the air this time of year about spending. You know, you get excited, you're out shopping or having dinner with family, and you know the world is abuzz. So as you guys are dealing with clients, I know that we don't want to get into client stories, but how do you rein somebody in? So you've spent hours and hours and hours on these financial plans, and let's just say, you know, you've got somebody that comes in that wants to buy a Ferrari or a vacation home at this time of the year. And maybe they're...
Happens all the time. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, they're buying into the marketing and it's detrimental. How do you address the behavioral side of that, first of all?
Best I'd say is just get ahead of it. I mean, that's kind of a very privileged take from our end, you know, when you're talking about with clients, because we're meeting all the time and talking about throughout the year. So, you know, in my perfect world, because, I mean, you spend more. It's just like summer, right? I mean, like, you know, kids are out. You're going on vacations. Do your best to, you know, curb the frivolous spending, but it's going to creep in to some extent or the other. So, to me, it's just ideally, you know, plan ahead as much as possible. You said spending. Another one's like charitable giving. I know a lot of people like to give some one-off charitable gifts at the end of the year. So, ideally, if you've done the right things throughout the year as far as, you know, taxes, saving towards retirement, you're hitting all the marks, then... it's not, you know, then you can plan ahead because it's trying to find the best deals. Right? That's kind of person by person basis. So that's what I would say to start.
I think you just pointed it out a little bit, but the other idea would be making this time of the year an exception to high spending. You know, I was over budget this month because I had to buy all the Christmas gifts. I know we joke back in the office together that, you know, depending on when your birthdays are or other holidays, you could probably add up the, you know, 8, 9, 10, maybe all 12 months are all high spending months if you figure it out, you know, between vacations, birthdays, other holidays perhaps. So just be mindful that, you know, it might feel like you're spending higher during the holidays, but it might just be part of normal spending, just shifted in a different area.
Starts with getting organized. I mean, I remember a time, and I didn't do this all the time. I was not diligent yearly, but it always felt good when I was on top of it. I would start in the beginning of the year and kind of look at last year to see what I spent. And of course, if you're spending your money on children, it's a very different experience than, you know, when other people who have, you know, are spending their money on luxury items or their lifestyle is different, right? And charitable, whatever direction you're going. But I would make a point of setting aside a little bit of cash in like a vacation fund based on last year's costs. Of course, then your kids get older, or maybe you take up a hobby that's a little different than what you did last year and it requires a little adjustment. So I wonder if we say it all the time, you know, look at what you've got coming in and get organized first, even with holiday spending, right?
I think with anything, yeah, I agree completely. That's well said. I mean, I remember John, our founder, he would always say that. I thought it was a great idea, and I've heard a lot of people do it. Like when you're going on vacation, budget, and I hate budgets, but, you know, 'tis the season. So when you're like budget out exactly what you want to spend, and then like I remember him saying to the extreme of like, oh, and then make sure you spend every dollar. I'm not saying do that. Like he almost went overboard with it. But point is, then you cut the stress out. I mean, it's a stressful time of year for some people, you know, hopefully finding some time to relax. But yeah, I think if you just map it out, budget it, then it makes it a lot easier to,
especially if you're doing like vacations, like if you're planning.
Well, I'm saying in this time of year too, like again, like what do you typically give to charity at the end of the year? What's your budget per person? And then, you know, and again, if you've already organized everything else throughout the year, it's super easy to say like, hey, don't worry about it. Thankfully, I will say I don't, you know, I feel like we joke with clients that can run a bias and things like that, but I don't really talk to anyone about their year-end spending because we've done all the other right things throughout the year. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, we don't need to nitpick.
It becomes second nature too.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how do you evaluate whether a want, because obviously there's wants and there's needs, doesn't matter what flavor it is, whether it's for your kids or for your charity or for your lifestyle, how do you evaluate whether a want might actually be a long-term investment in your goals?
I think car's an easy one.
So it's just subjective?
Yeah, probably, but I mean, some of it's somewhat objective from like the utility. Like I said, like clients who, or anyone I talk to, like friends, family, doesn't matter. If you're thinking you're going to have to buy a car in the first half of 2025, like there are a lot of good deals right now. And I'd say it's more of a long-term investment. Like you're going to have to buy it. It's not a matter of if, it's when. So if you can scoop up a really good deal, like I see it, and we all see the commercials, like 0% financing on a car purchase, now could be a really good time to do it. Don't wait. But again, that's, you're going to have to do it soon anyway, so now's a really good time to put that to the forefront.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way. You know, that there's a certain time of year to make big purchases or to purchase certain things.
Yeah.
So the more researched you are, the better, but it took me a lifetime to figure that one out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so pay attention to the marketing and do a little bit of research on your own. Sticking to budgets, or speaking of budgets, what's a small budget habit that you can start today to make budgeting feel less overwhelming and more like it's a success story by the end of the year? Is there any one thing you can offer up? I like this subject because I know we don't like budgets, but I'm not a CFP. So I like
I think
to
a
talk,
lot of people like budgets. I just
I love to talk to people about how they budget, because you just you get a system going and you never know that somebody else's idea might work better for you. So that's kind of fun. And I think everybody wants to, I don't care how successful you are, so I think everybody might be pro to learning how to do something a little bit differently to get what they want faster.
Yeah, I think the first step, whether you like budgets or not, is just having a step on the scale and figure out where you're at right now. If you just are kind of a spender where you just bare your head, you have set up everything on auto paying and just hope that the income coming in covers everything, probably not the best way to track things or run a budget or however you operate. But step, you know, going, you know, starting a spreadsheet, or there's, you know, now we live in an age with there's a dozen apps out there that are, some are free, some are you pay, which I honestly would say it's probably worth the investment in the exercise.
I was going to ask you that,
to just
about
pay
the tools.
Because they're usually, you know, most of them are maybe between $80 and $100 a year. I think it's a pretty good investment in yourself if you're thinking of, I mean, I'm sure they're on sale right now.
Yeah. So I love to start my budget by spending more. No, I'm joking. But no, I agree with you, though. I think that's it.
There are a lot of tools.
There are, and a lot of free ones, too. So,
right.
I mean, and the catch is always that I'm sure they're sharing your data for using it, but, you know, name me one thing that really doesn't do that anymore. So, yeah, I agree. Just tracking it. Don't put pressure on yourself. I mean, that's why I feel like the only people who hate budgets, well I dislike them, but people who really don't want to do it, I think it's because they, A, think they're going to find something that they don't want to see, or it just seems like too much of a time commitment. Using one of the tools can really take off the time commitment. Like, to put some context, unless you're really deep diving it, you could probably sign up for one of those tools, get everything linked, and then audit, you know, 7-8 months worth of spending to make sure something wasn't double counted in like 25-30 minutes. It's super easy. Then if you want to go really into the, down the rabbit hole to look at each category and where you're spending, then maybe you naturally find some things that slip between the cracks. But I just, the reason I say I don't like budgets is I feel like people feel pressure. They feel like they're under attack for something. It's like, no, but you should
know
the
number.
They don't
want to be told how to spend their money.
Exactly. Right. And so do it like it's natural. Like, use something that's going to make it quick. Don't kill yourself with the spreadsheet. And then, you know, if you naturally find some areas that you just want to curb back, you know, great. But at least, you know, the budget doesn't mean you have to reduce, but knowing your categories and then just saying, I'm going to keep this exact same spend into next year is still a budget. You just didn't reduce.
Well, it makes you look, like, even the banks now are using like the bucket system, if you will. I won't, yeah. for lack, because I don't have a visual to show, but
yeah.
It is really primal how when you're looking at something, it really taps into your motivation to do it better. So if you can get yourself over the hump of avoidance and burying your head in the sand and just give it a shot, you might actually find it to be helpful to stretch out your dollars to prepare for big events or big purchases throughout the year, especially Agreed. At the end of the year, right?
Agreed.
High income interest debt. This is a fun one this time of year. You know, ignorance is bliss right now, I think, with a lot of people when it comes to credit card debt. They're just, you know, they don't care. It's like, I don't care. I want this, or I want to give this to whomever. So I'm just going to do it and I'll pay it off later, kind of a mindset. Is there a situation where someone let their credit card balances just kind of snowball and then faced financial stress during the holidays where you could address a better way to handle it, other than the obvious what we're talking about, and that is to be prepared, you know, early and pace yourself? But a lot of people don't have that discipline. They just
I think the easy one that I've seen a few times has been, you know, we talked about there might be a lot of gift buying, a lot of charitable giving at the end of the year. A lot of people will get year-end bonuses or beginning of year bonuses. So sometimes, just given the nature of how those checks fall, they might spend their money or spend them on things before the money's there.
Or even allocate it beforehand. Yeah. If it comes in, this is what we want to do with it.
Yeah, and then, you know, it could be like Clark Griswold and get the jelly of the month club. That'd be a tough one. But yeah, I would just say, I mean, easy trap not to fall into is, you know, don't spend what's not there.
What's the best plan of attack? You know, there's one big marketer out there in the finance world who likes to talk about the snowball method of debt reduction. And that is all marketing, I think, to some of us. And some people, it's pure psychology, so it works for them. Is there one that works best? Tackling high interest debt first versus the snowball method. Let's explain to people what the snowball method looks like.
Yeah, so I'd say snowball is more like a cash flow focus as opposed to the interest rates. So like,
it's called the avalanche.
Sure. Yeah.
There's a name for it.
Yeah, so essentially the contrast would be like if you've got four debts and one has a $1,000 balance, but it's got a 6% interest rate, and then you've got a this is going to get confusing.
Okay.
Yeah, no, so I would just say the snowball is just get rid of the smallest debt so that way you can allocate the monthly payment that was going out the door every month and throw that at the next smallest debt, right? So then you're paying your
– doesn't matter what the interest is, though.
Exactly, and the other is
– so you're looking
who
from –
cares?
From, so that's pure psychology.
It's a behavior play.
It's a behavior play.
Versus the high interest is more of a math strategy.
Right, you're going to save more on the other
right.
side.
And I guess it's 6 1/2 to the dozen of the other if you're more – If you're a person who leans more into that risk and reward kind of,
if you're highly motivated, I think I don't know why you wouldn't do the high interest route. But if you're low motivated and someone who gets motivation from easier
right.
wins, then you start with the balance.
There's some tools out there you can use too. Like SoFi is a good one where you could apply for a. Most people hear that and think student loans, but you could apply for like a personal loan. It generally has a better interest rate than a lot of these credit cards and just knock out a few of them at once. And then you've got that one payment. But again, going back to the behavioral side, you then have to commit that you're not going to mm-hmm. put the money back on the credit cards.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. I know a lot of people will do home equities.
If you've got a home with equity, yeah.
Right.
And I think another one I think has become a lot popular this year is the buy now, pay later. Rally, there's a couple of different companies that do that.
Like, you know, a firm. And
they'll, when you're going to buy it, whether it's the tablet or whatever, you know, it'll say, you know, 4 or 12 equal payments. And then you get to the final screen, it says, well, it is those equal payments that add, you know, four equal payments of $25, but it'll say at the end, yeah, for that $100 tablet, you're going to pay that plus a fixed monthly fee of $10. And you can do the math, and it comes out to be like 40% interest.
And also the – stop me if I get this wrong, but the sort of the, the situations where 0% down for, what, 36 months or 24 months or whatever, if you want to buy, like, say, a car or a boat, whatever it is. I can't think of an example. It sounds appealing at the time because you're thinking, oh, I'm going to get this really shiny bauble for nothing, yeah, for the next 36 months. But if you don't start making the payments or paying towards it and you wait until it's due and don't have the money, you're paying interest on that entire purchase. You're not just paying interest on what's left. You're paying that high interest on everything, yeah, right?
Read the ad slowly. It's, you know, 0% down is a lot different than 0% interest. Right.
Zero. That's what I'm thinking of. The 0% interest options. Is what I'm thinking of.
There are,
yeah,
options of 0%.
So be careful.
It's like anything. I mean, going back to when credit cards became a big problem to begin with, there's a really good way to use it and get perks if you pay it off every month. Same with the buy now, pay later. If it is 0% interest and you're making 4% interest in your bank account, I've leveraged it before. It's nice. But again, predicate you don't let it get away from you, because then if you can't hit the monthly payments or you do buy now, pay later with six different things and you just get bombarded, mm-hmm, then it becomes a huge problem. But to just say, like, oh, don't do buy now, pay later, it could be a good thing for people. You just have to, again, know what your cash flow situation is.
Yeah. Yeah. Feels like it's a chess game. Investing consistently during the holidays. We talked about automation, and I think that's obviously a really good option for people, out of sight, out of mind. And we talk a lot about that in our business. How do you sort of stay calm when the market is a little nuts and keep investing when the news is full of doom and gloom about the markets, especially during the holidays when your heart is leaning and your emotion is leaning towards giving gifts to people?
Generally, the market actually does, like the stock market actually does pretty good in the last part of the year, last month of the year. So, no, I mean, I think I...
So go buy those shoes.
Right. Well, yeah. No, I mean, to me, it keeps going back to
guilt-free.
Like...
guilt-free.
I guess if I wanted to give one message throughout the podcast, like, you know, not talking about buy now, pay later and all that stuff as much. To me, it's just, it sounds like we're, you know, plugging because it's a financial planning podcast. But like, to me, it goes back to what we've said in a million other podcasts, automation, not from automating a tool to track your expenses, but, you know, determine how much you need to save, which is based off of what you're spending, and then just put that in the forefront. Do it every month leading up until the end of the year. So you've already hit how much you need to save towards retirement. You hit the college savings accounts if you want to do that. You've paid against the debt, and you've got cash in the bank. That way you're not getting to December thinking about, you know, oh, do I still have to make this, you know, IRA contribution or something else? I mean, my point is, if you've hit all the other boxes, then hopefully you can kind of go back to that, you know, think about how much you want to give or gifting your time, whatever it is, but you don't have to play that. You're almost reverse engineering if you get to the end of the year and you're like, oh, I haven't thought about this all year and now I'm deciding to do it at a super busy time of year. Whereas if you've already checked those off working with someone or whatever it is, then it's you know, you've already checked all the other boxes. So what's left over goes to charity, goes to gifts to friends, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. For people who neglect their end-of-year financial housekeeping, and it's now December 9th, what are some of the things they should be considering right now? End-of-year financial planning tasks.
Generally,
make a big difference, I guess I should say, too.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I could think of were, like, again, going back to, like, any tax planning ideas or, like, insurance. Like, again, if you've had a lot of medical expenses and you've hit your deductible, if you can fit anything for the end of the year, like things like that, to avoid your out-of-pocket costs next year, that's good. I mentioned college savings. People tend to wait until the end of the year to do that sometimes. And so you get generally a tax benefit depending on what state you're in. That's usually a December 31st thing. So if you're going to put money in and you want to get a tax benefit, make sure you do that. So generally, that's what I think of. Anything that's going to reset January 1st, make a note of it, get it off the list. And those are my main ones, usually insurance and college saving.
Yeah, year-end deadlines. Those are the main ones.
We did a show recently for those of us who are listening on required minimum distributions. So you can tap into that if you want to learn more in very specific ways. But is there a great, just sort of overarching for this show, is there a great time of the year to take your RMDs? Is it better to do it in January or does it matter?
I'm an out of sight, out of mind kind of person. It's just first of the year, you'll find out first couple weeks of the year, what it'll be, whether it's from your advisor, your accountant. A lot of times you can just find them online on the website that your account's under. Just take it, be done with it, not have to worry about, forgetting about it and then the IRS getting a letter from the IRS.
Yeah, I don't think, to your point, I think people could probably go back and listen to the podcast. To me, it depends on what you're doing. Are you just taking it as cash and then living off of it, or do you not even need the RMD and you're just keeping the money invested? That plays a little bit of a role. I know we beat that up in the other podcast.
Yeah, they can learn more in detail. So the next conversation, we haven't talked about this in a while, but we could do a whole podcast about this, and we have actually in the past, but prioritizing family financial education, especially this time of year, is really helpful. If you do have family members that you want to help understand finances better, this is a great time of the year to start teaching, right?
100%.
How can families kind of turn holiday downtime into opportunities to teach loved ones about money, kids, family members, friends?
That's a tough one. I mean, that's in each. I mean, to me, hopefully, I mean, you hope this for most people, you get a little bit more time off, to your point about the downtime, and just start the dialogue. I guess it depends on the family members. Like if you've got, kids and things like that, and how open you want to be and discuss with them. I mean, you could talk about the budgets and kind of how you go about doing that, and budgets for different people, or same deal. If I keep mentioning charity, not that it has to be a part of this time of year, I just know a lot of people do, right? I mean, that's another piece, and just talking about your gifting habits. I mean, really, to me, that kind of also can go back to just the budgeting, right? Because generally, that's factored in; it's a line item in the list, and yeah, that's what
it's
I would
say. It's
such
a different landscape now. I'll just kind of talk about children for a second for those who have families. It's such a different landscape now when you're talking about money and children, because when I was a kid, and I've said this 1,000 times.
Don't talk about it.
No, we weren't allowed to talk. No, 100%. We weren't allowed to know. I actually was cursed at for asking how much money we made, didn't know how to balance a checkbook. Was never taught how to do anything. So I literally spent probably the first, admittedly the first half of my life hitting the wall. Oh, that hurt. Let's not do that again. Let's go this way this time, and trying to seek out the help of people who did know. And even then there was some ignorance as far as, financial advisor per se. I don't even remember those people existing. Of course, it may have been my socioeconomic level too. I wasn't exposed to any of that. But now, as a result, I'm completely different. I mean, even when my kids were little, old enough to start counting money, there was a bank account, and there was, showing them how to keep a bank account and showing them how to save money and explaining to them the importance of paying themselves and saving the rest. And I let them hit the wall. If one of them, I'll never forget going to Disney World with both of my kids, and one was just, it's weird because they're both same gender and raised them the same way with the same, exercises and so forth and chores and all that good stuff. And we walked through the doors at Disneyland, and my parents had given each of them, now both of my parents, each gave them $50, which, was a lot of money. And I thought, well, let's see how this goes. They each had $100. We walked through the gate, and I kid you not, in the first hour, one of them spent all of his money and of course, spent the rest of the day wanting, was so stimulated by all the colors and stuff, kept wanting to spend. The other one had his money the entire day, and as we were walking out at almost 11 o'clock, we ducked into the Rainforest Cafe, and there was a little gift shop, and I said, don't you want a little memento of Disney World? And there was this little bucket in the corner of the restaurant with this little tiny backpack that was $3.47. And that's what, and we laugh about it now. Now they're much, both of them are really good now. They've spent a lifetime understanding, the one had to understand the word no, you spent your money. You've already spent your money. You can't have that. And that's hard to do as a parent. To tell your kid no, especially in those circumstances, it's a vacation, or it's the holiday, I'll just let them have it, and then they're not learning anything. So that whole process is so different now than it was, when I was growing up. So I would certainly advocate for conversations and even suggesting this time of year bringing your family members into your goal setting, right? This is what we want to do next year, and we want to take a vacation, or we want to put a shed on the back of the house or a new porch or whatever it is. Letting the kids be part of those conversations to understand what goes into those thoughts, right? What goes into that planning.
I guess, real quick, I mean, nice part about, you know, fact is not everyone is going to be able as a parent to, you know, might not be able to leave an inheritance or something left to their kids, but they can leave good financial principles, or at least, you know, the practice of being transparent, and it doesn't cost a dime to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Costs a little bit of time, but everyone can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, doesn't need to take much time, but just repetitive and being constant, that can lead to, you know, like you said, your kids being, you know, more widely successful with, you know, their financial skills than they would have otherwise, perhaps.
Agreed. Take the time to recalibrate. I mean, no matter what, even if you're hearing this and you feel like, oh, I'm not doing any of this and it sounds stressful, whatever. January's
never too late.
January 1st is upcoming, right? So 24 may have been come and gone. Get through the holidays, do what you got to do, and then, you know, move on to January and start and, you know, pick up on some of this. Because again, hopefully it's going to help you be, like I said, I don't want anyone to be stressed. I love this time of year, so I'm excited. This is fantastic. So yeah, just if it's not you for 24, put it into 25 and just pick up and make the New Year's resolution that you're not going to let fall through the cracks.
Yeah, and stick to it. Great advice. That's a good way to stop. So that's it for today. We appreciate you tuning in. Don't forget to share this with your friends, and we will catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.